Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 10th of June. The American Players Theater kicked off its 34th season. Isn't that something? It was the dream of three wonderful people more than 34 years ago, to find this place, a perfect place in the United States to do classical theater, particularly Shakespeare. And lo and behold, where did they go? Spring Green, Wisconsin. The 34th season started with a preview performance of Shakespeare's The Two Gentlemen of Verona, which was over the weekend. And here's what's on the lineup for they're doing eight plays in rotation, some up the hill in the stage and some at the smaller, more intimate theater. The Two Gentlemen of Verona. They're also doing Hamlet, and they are doing Anthony and Cleopatra, Shakespearean plays. Molly Sweeney, which sounds delightful. We'll talk about that. Too Many Husbands by Somerset Maugham. Dickens in America, a show that features James Ridge. I believe he did that in Milwaukee, actually. And also Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, the Tom Stoppard play. And what am I missing? All My Sons by Arthur Miller. So that's the lineup for this summer. And it's a beautiful place. It's nestled in the woods. The Up the Hill Theater is under the stars and in the woods, and it's just gorgeous. And they are committed to performing Shakespeare and also to classic drama. We are delighted to have two of the stars of Two Gentlemen of Verona with us the hour that you're about to hear, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. I know that many of you have attended, you have favorite plays that you've seen or experiences, because it's not just going to the theater, which is, you know, all you need, but it's the whole experience of taking the walk and the woods and the day and the weather and everything. So tell us your favorite moments of attending American Players Theater. We'd like to hear from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Marcus Trzynski is one of our guests this hour. This season marks a decade for Marcus at APT. Some of his roles have been Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream. He's been in The Royal Family. He's played in Glass Menagerie, Troilus and Cressida, Of Mice and Men, and The Gift of the Magi. Marcus, thank you ever so much for being with us. Happy 34th season.
I'm very excited about it. I'm so happy.
Yeah,
I'll still be here after 10 years. They still want me.
Oh, that's good. It's good to be wanted, isn't it? You must be pretty good, too, though.
Well, I don't know. They're very nice to me. They're very kind to me.
Good. Travis Knight is also with us, and Travis is returning to the woods for his fifth season. Some of the other shows that he's performed in, Richmond in Richard III. I saw that show last year. It was terrific. He's been in Troilus and Cressida, in The Tempest, The Critic, Major Barbara. He also has performed at the Goodman Theater in Chicago and many other places. Travis, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Well, I don't know who wants to start, but I always like to start with the dream of this theater because it shows you how old I am. But I interviewed the people who founded this many, many years ago, and they were talking about it as a dream that became real. And I am just tickled that here we are 34 years later, and this company is still alive. Isn't it great?
It's a major testament to the people that come out here. Because they want what we do. It's so exciting to do plays for people who want to see them. It's a spectacular audience and a spectacular venue. So we're just very, very lucky.
You know, if anything, the younger generations have been criticized for texting too much and having attention spans that last 4 minutes and not being able to absorb classic drama or Shakespeare for that matter. How do you attract ongoing audiences? Because you're into the second generation, or in some cases, the third generation of theater goers now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that is also a testament to what theater is. It's been around for probably 4,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not that long. I don't know how long exactly. But it just shows you what that theater has its own niche. It doesn't need to be quick because we all need stories, and that's what theater is. We all need to hear these type of stories because they're all in us, and we all recognize ourselves in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in terms of attracting younger audiences, especially like in this text and shorthand generation, I think what's fun about this is trying to figure out how do we make these stories that are centuries old, how do we make them relevant to today? You know, it's one of those things. So we spent a lot of time doing our homework and a lot of time in the classroom with vocal coaches and our directors and everything, trying to figure out how do we take this text that is so old and make it sound so contemporary to people's ears out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do stuff like Two Gentlemen of Verona, which is this, you know, wild story about two friends, a bunch of young people that make mistakes based on emotions or whatever. And so we try to make that, we try to translate that into our generation and younger generations and all kinds of people that want to come and check it out.
Mm. And what is it about, let's just talk about Shakespeare for a moment because he sure is worth talking about, but I'm wondering what it is about his stories, and I'd like to hear both of you respond to this. Marcus, if you would start. When we talk about needing to hear stories for our lives to be rich, to be full, why is it his stories we remember hundreds of years after he wrote them?
Because he was the best at it, I guess.
I mean,
his themes are so universal and so human that we truly, I mean, the best plays are the plays where we see ourselves in them. We laugh at ourselves, or we recognize, oh, gosh, I did that when I was that age, or I made that mistake, or, oh, man, how could he do that, or how could she say that? But it's because we recognize ourselves in these plays so much, I think, that they've really lived on. And the poetry is so... it can be very, very dense, but yet it is so accessible that, I mean, the question that we always ask ourselves doing classical work is, and particularly Shakespeare, is why all those words? Why do we have all these words? And so we have to make them so relevant and so poignant to a modern audience that. I'm losing my train of thought.
No,
but
you made your point. I understand. Yeah. And it's good. It's good. So how do you, let's give it to Travis at this point. Travis, how do you take those words, and there are many of them, and they're beautiful. How do you take them, because it's one of the things that APT does so well, and make them understandable to me, who's living in 2013?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I started working here in 2009, I was an apprentice. They brought me on. And, yeah, I was only about a year and a half out of school.
Mm.
And I remember having a conversation with Brenda DeVita, our associate artistic director, about Shakespeare. And I didn't do a lot of Shakespeare while I was in school. So it was kind of still this foreign world to me a little bit. And it intimidated me. It intimidated me a lot. And I had a conversation with Brenda, and I, you know, didn't necessarily really like him at that point.
Oh, really?
And it was hard. I was like, okay, well, Shakespeare, I mean, I liked it because I was like, there are certain things, certain monologues, I was like, that's really cool, but I didn't understand it. I couldn't grasp it. So we had this whole conversation about how can Shakespeare still be relevant and all this stuff. So I came here and I started watching this work and I started doing the classes as an apprentice and watching the people here that work here who have been working with it for a very long time, who do such good work with it, and being able to understand it for the first time, really, it was mind-blowing.
Mm.
And, you know, and this is my fifth season, so I fell in love. I fell in love with Shakespeare, and I fell in love with classical texts. And I think that happened because they take great care in looking at every single word. Susan Sweeney, who had a voice in text here, she gave me, I have to thank her for giving me the gift of, like, a process and sitting down, and even the words that you think you know in these monologues, in these lines, in this work, the words that you think you know, you look every single word up, and you look at every single definition of that word because it could mean so many different things. So you hit your lexicons and you hit your Oxford English dictionaries and all of that. So you spend a lot of time looking at the words. You spend a lot of time looking at the structure and the text. And we're so we're so lucky to have, we have wonderful voice and text coaches on every single show. Every single show has one. And you have somebody to go to and say, how is this landing when I say it like this? How else would you look at this kind of a line? What's the other meaning in this? So we spend a lot of time really dissecting the work and really looking at what it is we're saying and why we're saying it. And Shakespeare was so good at, he's like, you know, anytime you might have like an argument with somebody and you go home later and you realize, man, I should have said this. Oh, man,
exactly. Right.
He gave you right there. Everything you needed to say, he gave it to you. He put human interests and he put human feelings into the best possible.
Nice answer. Marcus, how do you make Shakespeare relevant to us now?
A lot of it is what Travis was saying. That is our work. I mean, the plays themselves are wonderful already, and the work we put into it to make it relevant to an audience, and not by doing it, not by, you know, making dumb jokes out of it, but by literally taking what it is and making them see themselves in it, and the lines particularly have been said for so long, since, I mean, the late 1500s, early 1600s. But they are still hilarious. The jokes are still really, really funny. You know, like, we were talking about how modern some of his jokes are, and the monologues and the soliloquies, Hamlet's soliloquies, are still very, very relevant today, because we certainly go through those kind of struggles and our thought processes, and he put them into these words that you just get to say. So, I mean, it's wonderful, I think, for an audience, for it to be modernized for them in a certain way, but also for it not to be, because it's its own thing.
Tell us the story, and I'm wondering if Two Gentlemen of Verona is a much staged play, or is it rare to see this on stage? And you've given us a little bit of an idea of what it's all about. I've never seen it, and I don't know if I've ever read this particular play. Why is it funny? What's the plot line, Travis?
So Two Gentlemen of Verona, you know, it's not done terribly often. I was trying to find a bunch of source material before we started rehearsal over the off season, and I was reading some essays about Two Gentlemen of Verona and Harold Bloom, who is a renowned Shakespeare essayist. He absolutely hates this play.
Really?
His thing is, like, his commentary is like a page and a half long, and you're like, and it seems very, I got on a very shallow level. I can see why so many people don't. They might not like this play, and I can see why it's not done terribly often. Because, I mean, the ending a lot of times can cause problems for people, maybe. I'm not going to give it away. But people don't really look at it from a deeper level. And we have Tim O'Sell at the helm directing this thing. And Tim is one of the smartest people that I've ever worked with. He has an unbelievable ability to look at the absolute human nature of characters, of plays, of what happens. And Two Gentlemen of Verona, I have fallen in love with that play. It's a play about young people, two best friends. One is on his way to Milan to experience the world, and his friend decides he's going to stay and for this woman that he's in love with. So that these two conflicting guys, they're both young, they've grown up together, they've known each other from infancy at one point, is what I say. And so you got two separate things, which, I mean, you talk about today's world. Look at the number of people, high school graduates going on to college to experience the things that they think they know now that their minds are going to be blown next year, you know? So you have these two young men who are best friends and who are off doing different things, and then the two people that they love. And it's just about these four people, these four lovers who go through so much, and they make decisions rashly based on what they feel and what their emotions are. And there's a bunch of wonderful other characters in the show, you know, Speed and Launce, these wonderful, funny individuals who are played by Steve Haggard and Will Mobley, and they're doing wonderful work. So it's a show about finding oneself and making decisions, and it's a show about forgiveness, ultimately. Mm-hmm. And Mm-hmm. There's a lot, I mean, there's a lot to be said about forgiveness. And mm-hmm. the number of times we, to even our own friends and our friends to us, we, and even family members, you know, we hurt people sometimes. Everybody does. Everybody gets hurt and everybody hurts somebody. And it's how you deal with those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that this is a story about people figuring out how to be adults and people figuring out how to move on and grow.
Oh, I think I'll go read it after this show. That was great. And what makes it funny, Marcus?
It makes it funny because of we make very, very youthful decisions. At the beginning of the play, as Travis said, we're these two best friends, one who's leaving to go to a big city and the one who's staying behind for love. And my character, Proteus's father, decides to ship me off with my best friend, so I have to leave this love that I've just connected with.
Mm.
And when I get to this bigger town of Milan, or we call it Milan in ours, it's Milan, really,
mm-hmm.
and I fall in love with my best friend's new girlfriend.
Uh-oh.
And so, I know, I'm the bad guy. And and then it's our decisions on, you know, how do we deal with that? I mean, the extremes we go to over love, and I mean, it's situational comedy. It's funny because it's like, oh no, you didn't just do that, did you? Or you didn't just say that, or you're not really going to steal his girlfriend. And then there are wonderful, wonderful clowns in the play as well. In Launce, who he mentioned, Steve Haggard plays Launce, who is a servant character who's does a lot of social commentary, but also is just very, very witty humor. And Speed, who is Travis's character, Valentine's servant, who also witticism and social commentary on everything that's happening. Like, because we're the masters essentially. But we're the fools, and they're the smart ones, you know, as mostly is in Shakespeare.
We'll be welcoming phone calls. We already have a number of people who would like to talk about American Players Theater. Our guests this hour are starring in Two Gentlemen of Verona, but they will be in other performances as well. American Players Theater is a professional classic theater. It's located just outside Spring Green, Wisconsin. It's near Taliesin, and it's on the river. Well, it's not on the river, but it's very close to the river. It's really a beautiful part of the state. It's nestled on 110 acres of woods and meadows, and they have two theater spaces. They have the amphitheater, which is up the hill, and then they also have an indoor Touchstone Theater. The season runs, it just opened last weekend, it runs through October, 8 plays in rotating repertory, and we're talking about, well, we'll get to all of them as the conversation progresses. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And Facebook page, you can leave my favorite APT outings on our Facebook page. We'd love to read them. The best play you ever saw there. How's that? That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, Eugene Schultz will be with us. Eugene was with us a couple of years ago. He is a World War II vet, and at that time he was writing his memoirs, and they are powerful memoirs. His book, which is now completed, and so he's returning to the show, The Ghost in General Patton's Army, Third Army, that is, the memoirs of Eugene Schultz during his service in the U.S. Army in World War II. Part of the dramatic part of his story is while serving in Germany, Schultz was an eyewitness to the first Nazi concentration camp that was discovered by American soldiers, and it has really haunted him. The horrors of what he saw and the memory of what he saw has haunted him ever since. So he will be with us tomorrow during this time period. To your phone calls, our guests this hour are Marcus Trzynski and Travis Knight, and they are actors who are with American Players Theater. Dino is our first caller in Madison. Hi, Dino.
Hello, good morning. Can
Hi.
You hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, yeah, there's a problem with my phone. If I would encourage anybody to go over and check out the performance, because if anyone could bring Travis, or anyone could bring Shakespeare to life, it's Travis Knight. I say that because I was his sixth grade homeroom teacher and his drama coach.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I don't know if he remembers me, but yeah. I still remember him, because, you know, when most kids were, you know, having fun goofing around, Travis did that too, but he really had the gift. He had it. Whatever it was, he had it. And I'm just so thrilled that he's taken it and he's building a life around acting, because he really is a gifted actor. And I'll definitely be seeing the performance, and I would encourage anybody else to do the same. So hello,
Thank
Travis.
You. Wow, Mr. I haven't talked to you in a very long time.
I saw you in, I think it was a Raisin in the Sun a few years ago in Milwaukee.
Yeah, 20-year-old Walter Lee Younger, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was a few years ago. And then before that, yeah, you graduated in 99, so.
Yeah.
So, yep. I'm just thrilled to hear you on the radio, and that you able to do all these things, and you're actually doing Shakespeare. Wow. I'm going to end up sounding stupid, so I'll just hang up. I just wanted to say hello.
No, you don't sound stupid at all. Isn't that wonderful? Somebody recognized your talent early on, and I'll bet that he encouraged you too. It takes somebody like that in our lives, doesn't it, to make a huge difference.
Yeah, he cast me as Mr. Toad in Mr. Toad's Mad Adventures. I'm still waiting on that on the VHS copy of that.
That's great. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you, Dino, so much for the call. I'm wondering how maybe it's just a matter of getting older and trying to remember everything, but I'm wondering how do you commit these lines to memory? And is it harder? Somebody told me it was easier with Shakespeare, which I never understood, that it may be with other playwrights. How do you do that, Marcus?
It is easier for me.
Is it?
Shakespeare, because it's in a rhythm. It's almost like memorizing a song. Because you know where the rhythm is, because it's in iambic pentameter, so you're going da 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 with every single line.
Oh.
And so you know if a piece is missing, honestly.
Uh-huh.
And so then you just go back to your book and you say, oh, it's this. And the thoughts are really easier to remember, because in Shakespeare, if there are lots and lots of long thoughts, it won't have a period until the end, like a sentence. And so you know the exact distance that you have to go. Very much like memorizing a song. So if you know, the melody went like this, da 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 dum, then you think, oh, I'm missing the dum part. And then you go back to your book and you see that, and then you see that you missed that chunk. And so it's kind of like that.
Hmm.
I mean, easier for me.
And so do you do it by yourself reading out loud, or does somebody read the other part and then coax you if you forget a word or forget that ta-dum-dum or whatever it is?
Once we're in rehearsal, there are stage managers who will be following along in the book. And so once you've got your part memorized and you're doing it in the scene, sometimes at the beginning you would be holding your book and you'll be talking with the person in the scene and glancing at the lines in order to, you know, for them to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get rid of your book, stage managers are there, but I'm literally reading along with every single line. So if you miss a chunk, you say line or line, please. Hopefully that you say it in that nice way. And you don't get mad at yourself for not remembering what it is. And then they will just tell you what it is, and then you can continue on from the place that you left off.
And you're in more than one show, both of you are. So do you just deal mm-hmm. with it show at a time?
It depends. Lots of people have different types of processes on how to learn the lines. A lot of people learn them fully before we even begin rehearsing. Some people do half and half. I'm more of a half and half person because a lot of what you say or the way you say a line is informed by what's happening in the rehearsal, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the two different plays things, that's, it's like you have two different children, you know, so
right.
you know what play is what. It's only happened to me a couple of times when you have two plays where, because they're two Shakespeare plays, the lines will sound similar. It's happened to me in a play before where all of a sudden a line from a different play pops into your head and you're like, that's not it, that's not it, that's not it. But I know it's in there somewhere. Yeah, I mean, right now at the beginning of the year, we're both, I mean, most everybody is in two plays, but it's two completely different rehearsals, so you have to get your mind that, you know, wrapped around doing a different play when you go to a different rehearsal.
Do you have a special technique that you use, Travis?
To memorize it. I mean, I like to just go through and like figure out what I'm saying first, you know, breaking it all down into what I'm actually saying, what's at the root of it. And I think by, you know, looking up every word, I like to also, if I'm, especially if I'm speaking in verse versus prose, I go through and I paraphrase it in how we would say it today, kind of like I do my own version of No Fear Shakespeare, I guess. And by doing that, it's kind of like passive memorization where it's funny. You spend all this time looking up these words and breaking it all down to how I would say it now. And then when you actually go to start memorizing it, like, okay, I'm going to wander around and talk to myself for a little while and learn these monologues. It's surprising how much of it sticks in your head that you've remembered just based on learning what it is you're actually saying. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, Shakespeare gave us those words, you know, purposely to he chose all of those words specifically for the kind of story he was trying to tell, and they all kind of just fall into place. It's pretty cool. But yeah, Marcus is right. Sometimes you have to be careful. And for instance, like in Two Gentlemen of Verona, I have a line that says, "O thou that dost inhabit in my breast." But last year in Richard, I had a line that said, "O thou whose captain I call myself." And there have been a couple of times in Two Gents I've almost said that.
I can understand. Right, yeah. Let's go to Sheila in La Crosse. Hi, Sheila.
Hi.
Hi.
The reason why I called in was because I was there the first year when we opened up the box office and the chicken coop. And when I arrived, there was one big sandy dirt hole in the ground, and that was the theater.
Oh. Uh-huh.
It was a wonderful time. And to think that this many years later that the dream still lives, I think gives hope for the arts worldwide. And back then it was Annie Occhio-Grosso, Randall Duck Kim, mm-hmm. and then Chuck, I can't think of Chuck's last name.
Bright? Chuck Bright?
Bright.
And Bright, yeah. And the first season was Titus Andronicus in Midsummer, and Randy and the cast would rehearse on the grass outside of the chicken coop in the afternoon. There were no rehearsal halls, and of course, not a second theater. And it was just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, they were, what a dream they had, and that they were able to actually see it realized is just terrific. I'm with you, Sheila. To have this continue after all these years is wonderful. Thank you very much for the call. Chris is next in West Bend. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'm really enjoying this program. I've got my tickets all ready to see Hamlet this summer with my kids. And I wanted to let you know that 25 years ago, I first discovered APT with a friend, and we've been going every summer since. But the best part is 4 years ago, we started taking our kids. And when you were talking about how accessible this is to children, it made me laugh because the first time we brought our kids with us, I was a little worried that they wouldn't understand. And so my 12-year-old son was sitting next to me. We were seeing As You Like It, and I kept turning to him and kind of explaining what was going on, and after about three times he turned and looked at me and he said, "Mom, you don't have to tell me about this. I understand it." And he turned back to watch the play, and I realized that the language was not a barrier, because what the actors of APT do so well is bring it to life and make it accessible to the kids and the adults in the audience. So good job. We can't wait to come this year for our very first tragedy.
Great, thank you. We should talk about, at this point, some of the other plays you're doing. I read that whoever's directing Hamlet said that you have to have the right cast, the right actors have to be available, the right director, and this summer was one of those times when all of that came together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's incredibly true. Hamlet's it's a big show. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Hamlet. It's the show that everybody knows. It's one of the first Shakespeare plays that I read, and I actually really enjoyed it. I did that in high school, and it's John Langs, who is also another wonderful director. He's so right when he says you need the right cast, and they absolutely have that. You know, you have Matt Schwader, who's playing Hamlet, and he's been a core company member here for, I believe, 7-8 years now. Or he's been a member of this company, and he's fantastic, and he's the perfect choice for Hamlet, and he's doing such great work. And there's this wonderful supporting cast around him. You have Deb Staples playing Gertrude, and Jimmy DeVita is playing Claudius. You just have this wonderful cast of human beings who have all been doing this for a while, who all have their own wonderful skill set to support the rest of the story. So it's that's a very, very true statement that mm-hmm. you need a really good cast.
It's a very strong company in general. When you have people who have been here for 14, 15 years, you know, playing the small parts,
right?
It just makes the play that much better, mm-hmm. you know, because in a lot of times, that's the great thing about APT is there's a company yeah. here, and that extends out to people who have been here many, many return years. And so it just makes the play sing when you have the player king and the player queen, you know, who are just really, really talented veterans, you
yes.
know.
Yes, yes.
It's going to be amazing. I haven't seen any of it, so don't tell me anything about it, Travis. Don't ruin it.
I won't. Well, let me tell you a little story, Marcus.
It's Hamlet? What it's about? What's it about?
Thanks, Chris, very much for your call. And we have an email along the same lines, but even younger children are appreciating APT. Eileen of Spring Green says, we are blessed to have APT virtually in our backyard. Several mm-hmm. years ago, we began bringing our grandchildren after their completion of first grade to introduce these young minds from Iowa and Texas and Wisconsin to the wonder of Shakespeare. Under the Stars has been beyond wonderful. When these kids walk down the hill at the end of the evening quoting lines from the play, that's a wow. I'll bet that's a wow. First grade, no less, Marcus.
Wow. my son is going to be 5 this year. And so he went to his first APT play, which was Gift of the Magi this past winter. And I'm just so excited for him. That's such a great age. And to introduce kids that early, hey, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there may be something, Travis, to picking up the language that they're quoting from the play that maybe we think it's intimidating. But if you're 6 years old or 5 years old, it just seems natural, like learning a foreign yeah. language almost, right?
Yeah, they're little sponges. Mm-hmm. They just pick right up on that. It always blows my mind a little bit anytime I'm around a little kid and the stuff that they're able to repeat back to you and their ability to recall things that
yes.
you thought they would have forgotten. So
how true.
It's pretty cool. And these lines are beautiful. So it's great that the idea of some of this poetry just lands on them in a way that they're like, I kind of like that. I'm going to remember that and say that for this next couple weeks.
Mm. Thanks very much, Chris, for the call. Let's go to Brian in Appleton. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I'm in a pretty noisy car. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
All right. I just wanted to say I'm a theater student, a college theater student from Appleton, Wisconsin, and I had the opportunity to spend most of my summers at APT when I was in high school. And I got an opportunity to play a lot of Shakespearean roles while I was in high school, but my favorite part about the year was always going to see the shows that we had just performed and seeing how they were really supposed to be done. I remember getting the opportunity to be in Much Ado About Nothing as well as Midsummer, and then immediately following going to see an APT show, seeing Marcus Jasinski play the same roles that I got to play, and just thinking, oh, that's what the show's about. So really, for APT to me was almost like an acting master class. It was really amazing. It was amazing to have it so close to my high school experience.
Marcus?
I think I saw you in those productions. Were you at Spring Green? Did you go to River Valley?
I went to Middleton High School, actually.
Oh, okay. So I probably
I think you did actually come to our Much Ado About Nothing performance. I think I remember that.
Yeah. Those were, I mean, APT's, that was the way it was for me, too. I grew up about an hour and 15 minutes from APT, so they used to bus us out. So now people that I've been in the company with for 10 years, I used to watch when I was, 15, 16, 17 years old. And so they were, the people that I work with now are my heroes, So it's pretty cool. So I've had the same experience.
Thank you, Brian, so much for the call. Connie in Madison, hi.
Hi. I've been in the early years of American Players Theater. I went to every play twice. I couldn't get enough. It was And can you imagine the audacity of a company starting with Titus Andronicus, one of the most grossly violent, horrific plays, most inaccessible, least produced? I mean, what balls, frankly.
Yeah.
But when I had to stop going to everything twice, I had kids. My son became 12. I took him to Midsummer Night's Dream. The first performance of any great piece of art, I think, shapes the way that you're going to see every further performance. And
yes.
I didn't realize that so profoundly as I realized it when, because he was a musician, I decided to show him the Mickey Rooney 1930s Midsummer Night's Dream movie because it had incidental music by Mendelssohn. Mm-hmm. And he was so dismayed at how wrongly they had done it. And I said, well, every single performance of this play is going to be different. And I don't think he actually got that how much the director and the staging changes the conception of the play. It was such an interesting sort of breakthrough for him artistically to understand the power of interpretation. And I continue to think that the particular performance that he saw of Midsummer was just superb. It had such punked-out costumes and such remarkable creativity. So I consider what you do food for the year, and I eat on it and nourish myself on it all year long. Thank you for the work.
Thank you, Connie. What a lovely call. Thanks very much for it. Jim of Mequon writes in and says, although we prefer the outside performances, we had already seen the play offered that night, so we attended the premiere performance, which must have been over the weekend, of Molly Sweeney on Saturday afternoon. We were dumbstruck. What a fabulous, provocative play. We were astounded at how tight and perfect they performed. Colleen Madden is phenomenal, and the guys were excellent also. Do you want to talk a little bit about the two theaters, Travis?
So, you know, we have our Up the Hill Theater. That's the one that's been around since 1980. It's a big 1,100-seat house, nice amphitheater. That's where we do we do five shows up in the uphill space. And then we have the indoor space, which is the Touchstone, and that's a nice 200-seat house. It's a very intimate space. So you're able to do things in the Touchstone that you might not be able to do on the big stage, because things will get lost. Things like, you know, The Glass Menagerie and Long Day's Journey Into Night, you know, plays that are considered like contemporary classic plays, so plays that have been written in like the last 100 years, sometimes the last 50 years, that will continue to be classics as the years go on, like the next Shakespeare's, I guess. And you're able to do those kind of shows, those smaller shows in that Touchstone space. So it's great to be able to play in between, you know, that big old space out on the thrust, with, you know, 1,100 people, which is always such a rush. We had our first preview of Two Gents on Saturday. It's, you know, every year, I mean, you never forget it, but every year when you come back and you have that first preview and your first time in front of the audience, it's like, wow, this is really, really cool. And then you get to share it with that also wonderful Touchstone space where you don't have to worry about projecting as hard because you can whisper and be heard by everybody in that theater. So it's pretty great.
Yeah. We should tell people Molly Sweeney is a Brian Friel play, and it is described like this. Molly is happy, content, and blind. And now she has a chance to see. As everyone in her life celebrates what's about to be gained, little thought is saved for what might be lost. That's the Molly Sweeney performance that Jim of Mequon was writing about. It sounds intriguing, and his review made me want to see that as well. Let's go next to Art in Dubuque. Hi, Art.
Yes, hi, good morning.
Hi.
I was calling because I was thrilled when I saw in your program when it arrived in my doorstep this winter that you're doing both Hamlet and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and it's not common for those two to be done together, although they're kind of based on the same story. The two minor characters from Hamlet are Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, but it's beautiful to do because you have all the cast and you have all the costumes. We did that here in Dubuque a couple of years ago. And with the same cast, and we did back-to-back nights over two weekends so people could see them, you know, in rotation. And my question is, I thought it was interesting that the choice was made not to have the same director directing both plays. And I wonder if you could talk about that or just generally about the Hamlet-Rosencrantz process there.
And before they do that, do you perform Shakespeare in Dubuque? You're obviously in theater?
Yeah. I was Polonius in those performances a couple of years ago.
Oh.
This was Fly by Night Productions in Dubuque,
mm-hmm.
in combination with Loras College.
Oh, great. Marcus?
Yeah, I think they're just it's a wonderful pairing to do together because you can add such depth to both plays because the minor characters become the major characters in those plays, you know, from Hamlet to Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. But I think the your question about the two directors, that also gives it a difference. So it's going to be exciting to be in another rehearsal process, and you'll have so much depth from Hamlet, from the first play, that you can already bring to the rehearsal process, so you already have such a huge head start. And the two different directors are just brilliant. John Lang's directing Hamlet, his attention to detail and his storytelling is amazing, and James Bonin, too, in the second half for Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, is a Tom Stoppard genius. He loves him, and he's done many of his plays. I think he said he's done about 15 of his productions.
Mm.
And he saw Rosencrantz and Guildenstern when it first came to the States. So he just he's got such a mind for that type of dense language and Tom Stoppard in general. He's going to be wonderful.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Art, unless you had something else, Art?
No, that's all. I'm looking forward to seeing them both this summer. Thanks.
Great. Thanks for the call. We have some lines open right now if you'd like to join our conversation. American Players Theater in its 34th season. They had a preview of their two Gentlemen of Verona and also Molly Sweeney in the indoor theater over the weekend. And we're speaking with Marcus Trzycinski and Travis Knight. They are starring in Two Gentlemen of Verona and will perform in another play during the course of the summer, which we haven't even asked him about yet. I guess I ought to do that. And I know that this has been a place that many of you go to every single summer or at least every other summer. It's so beautiful, and the plays are so well done, and here it is alive after 34 years, and it's all good. So join our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. Marcus, are you in one other show this summer? And if so, what is that? Or maybe more?
I'm in two other shows.
Oh, you are? What are they?
Yeah, at the top of the season, I'm in Two Gents, which is the first show to open Two Gentlemen of Verona. And then I'm in a play called Too Many Husbands.
Oh, I've heard that.
And I'm one of those too many husbands. And which is a really, really funny farce by Somerset Maugham.
Mm-hmm.
We did a play of his a couple of years ago called The Circle that was also a blast to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second half of the season, opening in the first week of August, I believe, is I'm in All My Sons.
Oh, you are.
One of my favorite plays.
Mine too. I love that play.
I'm Chris Keller in that.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's just such a great play and will be directed by David Frank. Who's the producing artistic director, is directing Too Many Husbands, and All My Sons is being directed by William Brown, whom I've known for many, many years, and who's just a great, great director.
Mm-hmm. And you, Travis?
I am also in Hamlet, and the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Oh.
So I get to be a part of the dual casting.
I know.
Which is pretty great.
When you asked me, I was like, oh, man, you should have asked Travis, because I'm not in those.
No, I just sat back and listened to your response.
Yeah, I know.
Great. You did great.
I'm glad it went okay.
Yes. So, yeah, those are my two that I'm working on as well, and they've been really fun. And I'm looking forward to getting started on Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, because a lot of the stuff that's in that play is already starting to be laid in naturally in Hamlet. So
right.
it's going to be fun to, I think it's just going to be really fun for people to watch.
I imagine. Yeah.
How that happens.
Katie in Two Rivers. Hi.
Hi. I really like the show. I just have a quick question. I was wondering if when the actors perform, if they perform with English accents and with the traditional costumes.
Travis?
We don't, I mean, generally with our Shakespeare, we don't use English or British accents or anything like that. Unless that was somebody's, if that was a director's idea or a concept, maybe. But generally we don't. In terms of costumes, though, period costumes, it all depends on what world the director is living in and wants to put this world in. So it depends on the design team and what story they want to tell. Sometimes it might be period, and then other times we might change it to be more contemporary or modern dress. For instance, so Two Gentlemen of Verona right now, the look is kind of Pride and Prejudice, wouldn't you say, Marcus?
Yeah, late,
is that
late
best 70s. Way to... So it's all kind of, it all depends on what the design team and the director wants and, the kind of story we're going through. But at least this season, we're not using any accents or anything like that.
Yeah, the English...
Talking like ourselves.
We use our own accents mostly because we're doing these plays in America. So
yes.
We want to do them like we would do them.
Yeah.
Not trying to pretend to be something else.
That makes sense. Rick on email wants to know, how do you accommodate severe weather at your performance venue in the woods?
Yeah.
Last night? Well, we had our first technical rehearsal with Under the Lights and with our costumes, and it was just a downpour.
Oh.
So you're looking at, and you're telling somebody you love them very, very much, and they're drenched.
Oh, and you're drenched.
Oh. And your hair is in your face.
Oh.
It's funny, but, I mean, the weather, it seems like it would just be a hazard, but we get to do these plays underneath the stars.
I know.
So it just adds an element. It adds this element of, I mean, when you talk about how beautiful the sky is, or I swear by the moon, and the moon is there.
Right, yeah.
It's like, I mean, what could be better?
I know. Ain't that the truth? Thanks for the answer. Let's go next to Paul. We'll try to get through a couple more quick phone calls. We have tons of them. Hi, Paul in Kenosha.
Yes. Can you meet any of the cast after the shows?
Meet any of the cast after the shows?
Yes.
Out in the lobby there, we always walk out, usually on our way out, and a lot of times we have people out there in the lobby that we know that are coming to the show, so I think that's the best bet, generally. So, yeah, I mean, we head out to that lobby after every show as we're heading down the hill, so I think that's probably the best way to do it.
There are also talkback.
Oh, good, yes.
There are a few talkback nights. Two or three of them for every show, and they would be on the website. And after that, that's after the performance, and then the audience can stay behind and sit, and we'll come out on stage and talk about the process.
Those are always wonderful to go to.
Yeah.
Let's quickly go to Nancy in Evansville. Just about a minute left, everybody. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I just wanted to say the costumes are fabulous, but we haven't talked at all about the dining experience. The picnic in the woods is just one of the wonderful parts about the whole experience, and the tables are there, and the gas grills are there. And just a few years back, my husband proposed to me at APT while we were picnicking. So it's just a wonderful place.
Oh, congratulations. He picked a perfect spot. Good for him.
Sure
yes,
did.
He did. He's a romantic fellow. Yeah, I like it.
Well,
gentlemen, thank you very much. Have a rip-roaring great season. It sounds like it's off to a wonderful start. And thank you so much for being with us. Lots
thanks
of audience response.
Too.
Yeah, our pleasure. Yeah. Our thanks to Marcus Trzynski and Travis Knight. You can see them together in Two Gentlemen of Verona. You can also see them in other plays in which they will be appearing. There are 8 plays. They're all in rotation. There's an Up the Hill Theater and then the smaller Inside Theater. Go to American Players Theater. Just Google it and get more information about tickets and all of that. Well, that was fun, wasn't it? It's such a great spot. It's great to do a show on something that was a dream and became a reality, and here it is, presenting classical theater, Shakespearean theater to audiences year after year after year. Top notch. It's good. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, KP Whaley for on-air production in Milwaukee, and thanks everybody for all of your calls. Great conversations ahead, so stay tuned. This is the Ideas Network.